The only thing that stopped him becoming the best footballer in the world is that very thing that means he'll die without regret. He doesn't understand the game of football. And that's the only thing that ever held him back. But in not understanding the game of football, Jesus Christ, was he able to bring joy to the world.
Tim Sherwood here. You're listening to the Villa Podcast. So I left while you were sleeping. That's all it took. And I chalked the lines. I know I ended last week's podcast by predicting a Chris Wilder masterclass. I have to say, when I did hear an interview in the middle of the week from Chris Wilder, I started to soften on that idea that there'd be a masterclass. When I heard an interview from a Premier League manager complaining about a linesman eating a sandwich after a game of football, why is he talking to somebody else, not even a linesman? I knew Sheffield United were there for the taking. I knew this was not serious people we were dealing with, and I didn't need to worry about what happened before Christmas, because I also knew Unai Emery hasn't slept since December 22nd. I know he didn't enjoy his Christmas. I know he didn't enjoy what happened in January. He definitely didn't enjoy what happened in the game last week or midweek. But I knew for certain, more than anything else, whatever doubts I had about Aston Villa, Sheffield United had a manager who was more worried about a linesman eating a sandwich after a game of football. I knew Unai Emery wasn't getting hung up on stuff like that.
Is there anything better than a bank holiday weekend watching your nearest rivals concede a 94th minute equaliser, watching Ross Barkley run amok up in Riyadh, and then making yourself a big delicious BLT and egg sandwich to sit back and watch Premier League manager, self-anointed Premier League manager Chris Wilder somehow make a bigger tit of himself than he did on Wednesday night? I mean, that game tonight was such a non-event that Paul Tierney flashed up on the screen after 70 minutes, and my only reaction was, oh yeah, that cunt. Imagine Sheffield United were so bad, I didn't even have an opportunity to get annoyed at Paul Tierney. And they were absolutely dreadful, like brutally exploited by the boys. It was like watching Sean Bean get shot with an arrow after arrow after arrow in whatever Lord of the Rings film that was. And I would say this was actually more painful for him, Conan, particularly because he wasn't actually shot with arrows in Lord of the Rings. He was acting. But Conan, I find it easier to believe that Sean Bean was wandering around Middle Earth fighting against trees or whatever it was. But like, that's easier to believe than the fact that any of these Sheffield United players are playing in the Premier League. Like, they're in the top 99.99975% of footballers in the world. And I'm being generous there. It's probably higher. I'm also being generous to myself with what I've assumed there with the maths, making it slightly easier. And you won't be able to challenge it anyway. But not only are these lads shite, they were fucking miles off it as well.
Yeah.
And like, their manager coming out after the Palace game, imagine the sandwich rant wasn't even the worst thing he said. Like, nor was it referring to himself as a Premier League manager, because he's fucking barely that. But Chris Wilder came out after that game and said Crystal Palace have two brilliant players, and that was the difference. Implicit in that is all my players are shitbags. I mean, it's true, but they don't fucking need to hear that. Fucking do something. You've conceded 13 goals in the last three games. Don't tell your players there's nothing they can do about good players. You're playing Aston Villa next. We have good players coming out of our fucking arses.
We have good players coming out of our fucking arses. We have one of the best managers in the world. And we have one of the best managers in the world who is pissed off. He's the most diligent manager in the world anyway. And he is not happy. He's got a point to prove. Like, these boys have been making him look bad. Imagine that. Like, you know, Emery has said it explicitly. He wants to win the Champions League. He can't have these boys showing up every week making him look like a fucking mug. Like, he doesn't know what he's doing. And the tone was set from the very start. He showed up for his interview. And you can just imagine how this got set up. You know, I don't know who the reporter was, but she had obviously just rushed into the interview. Great, we've got him. Let's go. Let's roll the cameras. And she said, Unai, you've dropped Matt Cash. What's the reason behind that? And he stopped, looked at her, and went, good afternoon. And And not what he normally does, not when he repeats the polite exchange. He was like, you're jumping straight into like doubting my team selection. Good afternoon to you too. And then when he finally got round, got over that ignorance, he said, it's a tactical decision. Who do you think you are? Like, who do you think I am? What has been happening to this club? Get out there now and score 4 fucking goals in this first half an hour.
And the best thing about that was, as well, the changes were so simple and so obvious and so effective when they were implemented. I'm sure it couldn't have been very difficult for Unai Emery to G up these players as well. And what a fixture to have coming up next after that terrible run. It was amazing.
We'll go through the goals in a second. There was one other point I have to make. I don't know where exactly I stand on this because of everything you just outlined, because of how bad the team is, because of how weird the manager is. But after 20 minutes, everybody's leaving. You know, it's 3-0, right? Here's my point on this. Where are you going? Like, what? I'm not saying stay here. It's nothing grander. Like, you stay here and support the team, get behind them, let them hear you. Don't walk out on them. It's like, what else do you have planned? You obviously put 2 hours aside at least to sit and watch this match. Where are you going after 20 minutes? That's going to be better than this. You're at a Premier League ground, as your manager would let us all know, and you're watching Aston Villa play. Just sit back and enjoy the football. Like, don't. Like, yeah, it's shit that it's your team and they're getting absolutely hammered. And I can understand midweek games, late on, people getting out of there when it's fucking gone 10 o'clock already. But this is a Saturday afternoon that you've obviously catered for. I mean, I have an issue with people leaving off with like 80 minutes gone in a game on a Saturday. And it's like, surely you would have just factored in, look, it might take me an extra 40 minutes and I'd plan to get to where I'm going next. So don't count on me being absolutely on time for this block of 3 hours.
I'll just plan for that 3 hours, yeah.
Yeah, this is 20 minutes into the game. This is 20 minutes into the game and they're all leaving.
They're all leaving. They're probably going to end up in a pub watching the game anyway. Like, you're not going home. I really hope you're not going home as well. Imagine bringing that fucking head back into the house if you to watch your team.
Imagine it was one of us. Like, yeah, like your partners would be they'd be gutted. Like, they'd be so happy for you. Going out, like, yeah, you're really going to enjoy this. And then, like, within half an hour, you're coming back in, slamming the door. They're fucking cunts. Well, let's go through the first goal, the first of all the action that made these poor fellas go home. And it was, I mean, it had a bit of everything really, because I mean, the way Konsa and Bailey are getting these balls under control with their heads, it reminded me a bit of Man City players, you know, before Aston Villa completely dominated Man City. But you know, the really annoying thing about Man City is sometimes when the ball's loose, you think, oh, you've got a chance to get it. And they always keep it under control some way. They're just good players. And they're all able to get the ball back down to their feet and get a pass in the game, whatever the position they're in. And Konsa and Bailey down the right did this really well. And Bailey gets it back to Kamara. And then Kamara just gets it inside to Douglas Luiz, who was in the mood for this game for the first half. It's all he needed, really. And his ball to Watkins is lovely. And it's almost a tasty finish for Watkins. We can't really say that because he didn't finish it. It hit the post. But I love the pass. I love the run. I love the finish. And I love John McGinn following up on it before everybody else. You said Sheffield United players weren't on it. And McGinn ran past them all from midfield to go and get that ball.
It's so simple in the end. It's a lovely ball from Dougie Luiz, but for him to be allowed to pick up the ball in that much space, remember, like, this is after a clearance, a header, a touch, a second touch, and a pass before it got to Dougie. And all this time, Douglas Luiz is just standing in the Sheffield United half, inside their half. Douglas Luiz! Yeah. Don't give him that space. Fuck me. And that lethargy and stupidity just runs through the whole team, starting with their fucking goalkeeper. I mean, if you're ever struggling to remember his 4-syllable surname, remember the last one is Ham. Like, that'll get you there. He was far too slow off his line initially, but after the ball hits off his shoulder, he turns around and watches it. Get back! The ball is trickling towards your empty net. You have a teammate diving in to clear it. The ball's not even on fucking target. Where is the ball going next? Get up and fucking pick that ball up, you numpty. The worst thing about this for me, though, was why is Watkins peeling away? He's directly behind us. He can see it's not going on as well. We could all see it. I knew it wasn't making it. It hit off the post, but I was sure the Sheffield United player was going to get there. Why is there only John McGinn that's following it in? And fair fucking play to him.
Watkins peeling away in celebration as if he had just executed a finish that suggested to me he thought he was offside. You know? That was so good. It must have been offside, but I'm going to run away anyway and enjoy it. The second goal, Douglas Luiz magic again. He intercepts the ball in our box, plays a 1-2 of Kamara. Has to be said, it's not the hardest 1-2 he's ever going to play in his life. I mean, he intercepts the ball, turns around, rolls it to Kamara, and jogs past one player into oceans of space. Have they not? It's pretty insulting. They've not watched Aston Villa this whole time. And gets the ball, looks up, outside of the boot, round the corner to Watkins. Not around the corner, round the defender who's chasing Watkins back. It's inch perfect. It's absolutely brilliant. And it goes on to Watkins' run, and his finish is brilliant. Like it, and he knows as soon as he hit it, it goes in. You can see the replays. He's trying to balance himself. They go peeling off again in celebration. Although he's trying to do that, it turns out, every time he's shot. But that's a great ball. It's a great finish.
I actually showed a touch whenever that dreadful pullback from the fullback was arriving at Dougie's feet. I don't know why I felt the need to tell Douglas Luiz, of all people, to take a touch, particularly against Sheffield United, and particularly when he's 200 miles away from me. But then it's after that, it's just it's Douglas Luiz deciding to score. When you're against teams like this, shit ones that is, I don't think they're very good, Conan. I don't think I've made that clear. Like when they've I nearly said come out of their shape. That would have been a bad reading to this game. If they've moved forward, kill them. Kill them as soon as you get the ball back. And when Douglas Luiz dropped that off to Kamara, I don't actually think he realised there was as much space there. But when he did, good fucking night. I mean, talk about showing a lack of respect. Dougie might as well have wandered over to the Sheffield United dugout with a sunny side up egg in between two slices of potholed bread. You know the butter was in the fridge and you've taken lumps out of the slice trying to spread it. Yolk and ketchup going fucking everywhere. When he saw that space, it was just, give me the ball back. We're going to score. 20 yards out from his own nets, he decided they were going to score. And the pass is out of this fucking world. It's a great touch from Ollie Watkins. It's a great finish from Ollie Watkins. Absolutely beautiful goal.
Somebody said to me, do you not think 80% of people could play that pass? And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, that is inch perfect. I know what he's thinking. He's thinking, oh, it's an outside. I could theoretically play that ball. It's like 1 inch, 1 second. What, like, take anything off that ball, get anything miscued about, but it's not going directly into the pass of a full sprinting Ollie Watkins' run in that direction. The only place he can score, he has to get that ball around to his right foot at that perfect time to take the touch, and Watkins does well. But the pass is absolutely perfect. So absolutely not 80% of people who play football in the world could do. You're telling me a Sheffield United player could do that? No way.
And as you know, Conan, they're in the top 99.99975%. But whenever Douglas Luiz was lining this up, I was like, don't know, Dougie. Let's just keep carrying it. You've got loads of space there. I mean, it's such a difficult pass. I wasn't completely convinced Douglas Luiz should be playing it.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too. like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
And then Leon Bailey. I mean, we've talked about all the work this man's doing on his right foot. That's just making people second guess what to do. And we have to give Youri Tielemans, we're going to give him plenty of praise today, but the way he wins that header and gets it down to Watkins, I thought it was Watkins up there backing off in the defender, reaching across, like a Superman dive almost, a Jordan Pickford dive without the hands. Although, and then, and he heads it down, and then Watkins just looks up, sees Bailey, pushes it in front of him. And I know the commentators were upset that they let Bailey onto his left foot. Had they not been watching Bailey, I think the defender deserves credit here. Thinking, shit, Watkins has played this off. Bailey's going to take me. I know where Watkins is going to go. I'm in trouble here. And Bailey steps on his left and whips it in. And I mean, Jack on Twitter says, I mean, this game's so good. Leon Bailey's even bagging off his weaker foot.
Yeah, I mean, you've covered that off perfectly. The header from Tielemans is so good. The biggest compliment I can pay him is I did assume it was Watkins. And then the biggest compliment I can play Watkins is that it could have been Tielemans playing that pass. And he fucking loves that one. It's a tempting ball that gets the defender on edge way before he needs to be on edge. And then he's in trouble after that. I mean, he can probably get to the pass as well, but that's in his head. It's high risk, particularly if you're shite. And he's just seen what happened during the previous goal as well. I actually think he recovers pretty well. I mean, he does well to keep Bailey off his stronger foot and shows him inside onto his left. And Leon does really well. He must be putting in the hours in the training ground, Conor.
Yeah. The fourth goal, Youri Tielemans, a deserved goal. We come back to the chance just before that in the Rosenthal Award, but this was from second corner. A second corner in a row, and this one just goes straight into the box, and it's headed clear, and it's headed clear to Youri Tielemans. It takes a touch, and he crashes it off the crossbar. I mean, it's just such a satisfying goal, I'd say, the way he's thumped that in off the woodwork, and it looked for a second like it might come out, but it looked like it hit off the base of the post at the bottom as well. It was just, optics-wise, a lovely goal.
Yeah, the first touch is really good. The second touch is out of this world, and my only criticism is he hit it that hard. I mean, Fodderingham's the goalkeeper. I'd take 20 or 30% off that power there. Just get it on target. It's the goal, son. No need for that.
And then the fifth. Liam, you're going to be delighted to know that I have had the biggest few weeks in fantasy football land. And it is a new month, and we can talk about it as per the agreed rules.
That you have been sticking to stringently, fair play to you.
And my captain Watkins got me 3 assists, got me goal, got me bonus point, got them all doubled because he's captain. And I kept the faith of Alex Moreno. I wanted to turf him out.
Did you think about captaining anybody else?
No.
Did you not?
No? Okay. Anthony Gordon didn't come into me thinking. I didn't send any messages. But anyway, this ball from Tielemans over the top to Bailey, it's lovely. It's just a little, I mean, you think Tielemans, I mean, you think Tielemans is only good for the three balls, but he's got a bit of guile to him as well. As if those major three balls don't require guile, but he just lifts this one over the top, and Bailey has to be strong, in fairness, to retrieve the ball, really, and keep it on the sideline, keep the defender away, keep it on the byline, and it's the defender who plays it back for Ollie Watkins, and just stroke across this ball. It's just beautiful. He looks up, sees where the two men over are, and he comes across it. He lofts it up like a little pitching wedge, and it's just onto Moreno's left foot, and he just thumps it home on the volley off the laces. It's just a gorgeous goal.
Yeah, Trusty doubts himself after doing the right thing and using his strength to see it out. And when it's just about to work, he tackles the ball back into the box. It was like the two players switch roles. Like Bailey looked like he was ushering it out for a goal kick, and the defender trusted him, believed him that the roles had been reversed, and just tries to keep it alive. It was mental. And he gets his reward. It falls to Ollie Watkins. Like, well done, pal. What the hell was that about? And it's an absolutely brilliant pick out from Watkins. So simple again, though. It's like, you give a brilliant player that much time and space. Yeah. Give him the ball back, first of all, in your own box. Give him that time and space. Look up. He's got two or three players and even more time and space than he has. of course we're going to score from that. It's a beautiful controlled strike from Moreno as well, though. Just aesthetically, a really nice finish.
This is it. Like, the pass and the finish, and it is so easy because of how Sheffield United were defending them. But the way both of them just execute that off the right foot and then off the left foot, it's like, you can just tell they're better than us. You know, it's just like, oh, footballers are really good. You know, do give them a bit of space and see what happens. You know, Ollie Watkins is going to float this gorgeous ball right on his left foot. He's going to catch it absolutely perfectly. Just lovely to watch.
Yeah. A lot less than 80% of people could do that, I'd say.
And then the clean sheet almost got wiped out for my fantasy football team. Thankfully, it didn't. So Moreno's two bonus points are in check as well.
So wait off the... my mind.
That's a fucking set piece goal. I mean, I don't know. Is it even worth bringing this up again? I mean, I definitely bring it up in the Rosenthal Award as well, but for God's sake, like, they spent 90 minutes talking about Austin McPhee. Again, I think your theory is right that they're only talking about him because his hair is that long. And the ball, like, he's a striking figure. I know he's an interesting figure because we'll all remember him. And it is a set piece coach. That is interesting to talk about. And especially for a club like Aston Villa, they don't know much about Aston Villa, but they know the set piece coach. That's cute. Let's talk about that. And nobody, and he actually did mention, he did say about their set piece record being shit defending way, but nobody made the connection that we've been talking about a set piece coach and how great he is for 90 minutes. Anyway, they get a set piece and they score a goal. And it's Vinny Sosa, and I have a lot of time for Vinny Sosa, especially after he stopped John Duran getting sent off. Especially the way he can have a laugh. Was it with Tim? The goal's about to get struck off and he's smiling about it. I mean, he knows you're going down and he's making friends on the way down. Like, this is the thing. I almost feel bad about it. And like, it is offside. I mean, that's it. Maybe we shouldn't talk about it. But yeah, it's just annoying that they get a set piece and they do score, whether it was offside or not.
Colin, I thought that rant was very entertaining and I did laugh during it, but the entire premise of it was completely wrong. You started off by saying it's an other set piece goal. It's not. It's not a goal. It's in fact, it's a double offside. We defended it the way we wanted to defend it. We let them run past us. It's a double offside. The only problem with this is that they seem to be checking the foul on Longley. Just draw the line on that big noggin at the back and let's get on with it. I mean, this is the problem with the VAR system. It's being operated by people who are intellectually insecure. Like, they have to stick to the procedures because they don't have the courage to adopt their common sense. Like, they're terrified of making a mistake and they don't have the judgment and decision-making skills to fall back on. Like, they can't trust themselves to just say, he's clearly offside. We can make that decision. The other thing we're checking, correctly, procedurally wise, benefits Sheffield United as well. So let's not bother with that murky subjective call. Let's get on with the game because his entire head is offside. The entire part of his body that played the ball is clearly offside. Let's move on.
There was that moment where they were zooming in and you could see them talking. I was like, what are they? Are they not just drawing lines? Like, why did they keep zooming in? And then really, then that's what they were checking first. It was like, just draw the fucking lines and we'll all know where we stand. And actually, there's a line drawn for you at the edge of the box. Don't worry about it. Let's take a pause and we're going to come back with WhatsApp. It's a good day. The boys are back in town and I'm absolutely buzzing. I'm introducing a new fine, and this came very early into the match, so you can understand how hyped up I would have been, how Unai Emery'd I would have been coming into this match, how paranoid I was going to be that this was going to be another game like this, another tough nut to crack. And Diego Carlos follows his man into the Sheffield United half and throws him to the ground as he's backing up against him. And I'm like, I'm not watching 90 minutes of this. And I didn't in the end. He didn't do it in the end after that. But I've seen this before, Diego Carlos, ball coming onto feet and he just throws boys over.
Well, he doesn't want to get turned around and have to do his comic book run backwards, I suppose. Maybe that's what he's thinking there.
Yeah, bonus for Diego Carlos, good decision making. I mean, what about the free kick that leads to the John McGinn shot? We've created another routine. Douglas Luiz rolls it out to John McGinn to blaze one over from 25 yards.
The worst thing about this is the wall happens to split because Sheffield United are shite, but John McGinn, we tried to work a space there and John McGinn has just absolutely wellied the ball at where the wall should still be. It's a silly decision. And I don't know why this happens a lot. Douglas Luiz just defers to John McGinn for these spanks. Douglas Luiz should just be calling rank there and trying to whip that into the top corner.
Yeah. Yeah. I, like, why isn't Douglas Luiz? We talked about this loads of times. He can score from the corner flag. He should be practicing scoring from the free kick from 20 yards out in the middle of the goals.
Yeah, he absolutely should be. What he should not be practicing is the fucking John McGinn shot, though.
Yeah.
Only minutes later, Paul Tierney played advantage, and then the ball ends up 10 yards further back, and Douglas Luiz decides to have a shot 10 yards further back and from a worse angle, rather than just saying, give me the free kick. Absolutely crazy decision. Trickles into Fotheringham's gloves. Probably not a terrible decision, seeing as Fotheringham was the goalkeeper.
Konsa had a throw-in and he threw it straight out of play for a goal kick. Didn't think I'd miss Matt Cash on throw-ins. And then Moreno, I mean, both of them are to blame here. Like Ramsey, I would say Ramsey goes for the 1-2. He doesn't. He passes it to Moreno. He couldn't have looked less interested in going back up the line to receive that second ball. And Moreno rolls out of play anyway on the sideline. Just
that's because he
was receiving that ball.
He wasn't interested in receiving it up the line. You're right. Again, Conan, you're absolutely spot on. He was interested in receiving the ball behind Moreno where the space was in the middle of the fucking pitch. Give it back to him there. If Ramsey's not there, why are you kicking the ball there?
Yeah. That's why I'm sort of blaming both of them, but yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe I should take Ramsey out of this one. Maybe Ramsey does get his way.
Blame the person who kicked the ball out of play.
And the last one. Welcome to Aston Villa Football Club, Morgan Rodgers. I mean, I'm sorry to do it. I'm happy to see you here. We're all delighted. We're all looking forward to seeing what you got. Delighted you got on for the last 10 minutes as well. But I am not happy to see you going and collecting a Matt Cash throw-in. And we know how measured and how perfectly weighted those throw-ins are. And Matt Cash drops one onto his right foot and he kicks it straight out of play trying to get it back to Matt Cash. I will be keeping my eye on this, Morgan Rodgers. The standards have now lifted. Be aware.
Well, let's just hope Matt Cash throws him longer to him from now on, because you know what a missile he's got in his two arms.
The first WhatsApp wins. Why is John Denver playing as the game is going on? The match has fucking started. The second half has started. It's about 30 seconds into it and I'm still listening to You Fill Up My Senses. Absolutely insane.
So many things strange about this. I mean, they were 4-0 down. I don't care if you do this every game. Don't do it now. This is just fucked. Not now. Not now, admin. As you'd like to say, you and your 14-year-old pals on Twitter. Like, fuck me. Like, don't play it now. They're 4-0 down. They're about to concede as well. They're probably going to concede before the fucking verse kicks in. Yeah. Pathetic. And the second thing that's strange about it, in what world is that going to get the fucking fans G'd up? In what world is that going to get the players playing better?
Yeah. It's like we were at a GA game together. It was a club game. And, you know, there was a Galway team on in the first match. I think it was Hurling first match. And the Galway team won. And straight away, Galway girl comes on. Everyone's dancing along. And then Saw Doctors N17 comes on. And everyone's bouncing. And we were like, I wonder what it would be, you know, if Derry ever went and won anything. And there's a Derry club playing the next match. And the Derry club wins. And they hit play. They press play on that record player that booms all over Croke Park. And oh, Danny boy, the pipes are calling. Would you rather that or John Denver? The second WhatsApp whinge. This is a trend that I've noticed and I'm not happy with it. It's about time we started speaking about it. Sky Sports come back from an ad break and the presenter, whoever it is, talks over a couple of graphics on screen and throws to an ad break.
Yeah. It's mad.
Only for these Saturday 5:30 matches that they seem to hate showing. Stop fucking showing it then. Just don't show it.
Yeah, we have talked about this before. Kelly Cates' role is to introduce the next ad break. That's what her role is in these half times. And like, I mean, let's get real here, Conan. Jamie Redknapp was the primary pundit in there as well. So was that really a bad thing? Like, you know, let's just get Ray Winston on and tell me to throw me money down the fucking drain rather than listen to Jamie Redknapp shouting on.
Can I tell you something? I'm starting to soften on Jamie Redknapp.
Are you?
I don't know why exactly it. I'm not sure even how many good points he's made or any time I've watched it. I'm like, I think I'm just maybe getting a growing an aversion to the people who are more in my screen. Maybe I'm just a hippie. Maybe it's just an alternative choice. Maybe Jamie Redknapp, who's on all the time, is suddenly the alternative choice. And yeah, I'm starting to warm to him a little bit more. I can just feel it in my stomach. I can't give you a tangible example just yet, but I'm keeping an eye on it anyway.
So he's obviously robbing a fucking living because he's not particularly good at the job that he's got. But I think maybe you're either feeling sorry for him, or based on the fact that it's you, you've pitched him as this underdog now because he's getting all the shit games. He's getting all the shit.
You're touching on it. And I don't know the answer yet, but we are working through something together here. And because there's something in it when he's banging, you know, the bottom part of his hand against his palm. He's, you know, and it's shown to me, not that I'm a big gesture man, I'm obviously a big gesture man, but he's shown in that moment, not in a showy way, sorry, is my point, that it's actually coming through that he is enthusiastic about this match. And that's, I think, primarily what I want most. I want that even before somebody who knows what they're talking about. I want somebody there who's enjoying themselves. Like, I've often pointed out, you know, say Neville picks and chooses when he just decides to drop into the studio when it deems that it's a big enough game or a big enough talking point that he's now going to lend his wit and gravitas to. Jamie Redknapp will not sink to those levels. He doesn't feel like he's beneath any game. He loves all these matches, and there's something endearing about that. Even Aston Villa hammering Sheffield United, Jamie Redknapp is bringing it.
Well, this is probably the biggest game he's going to get, to be on fucking Luton and Everton.
Yeah, that's a fair point. That's a fair point. The final WhatsApp whinge, it's a real life WhatsApp whinge, and it comes from you. It's 5-0. There's 15 minutes to go. My phone flashes. This is fucking pathetic.
No, Conan, to be fair, I quote tweeted myself from an hour previously. It was 2-0. And I said, we need to break the fucking record here. And that is ultimately the really frustrating thing about this game. We should have broken the record. There is absolutely no way we shouldn't have broken the Premier League record. And you've mentioned you're going to bring Youri Tielemans back up later. I'm going to bring him back up now. The really frustrating thing is that Tielemans was the only one who appreciated what was on offer here. Tielemans been here before. He's done it before. He's scored 9. Like, Tielemans could smell the record was on here. Tielemans wanted it. The rest of them fancied a fucking sandwich and a cup of tea in front of Chris Wilder, but fucking give him something else. Give him the only thing that could annoy him more. Give him a double-digit battering here. And that was, it was on. I can't, anybody watching that game, I don't need to explain it to them. They can appreciate how much that was on tonight, because not only are Sheffield United the worst team in Premier League history, they were not on it tonight. So you're taking a bunch of shitbags who can't play football and then who refuse to play football tonight. Beat them 10-0.
Yeah. Do you know what? I agree with you. WhatsApp whinge. WhatsApp whinge revoked. Definitely could have broken the record there, but that's fine. Youri Tielemans ran out of gas eventually, and once that happened, the game was over, and I think that probably coincided with this is fucking pathetic. The chances stopped coming. But anyway, we'll take a break, and we'll come back after this. My mind's
telling me no. This is what makes Big Bear DT so hard to resist. But my body's telling me yes, baby. He's like a lovely big sloppy bacon cheeseburger. Body, but there is something that I must confess. You know that ultimately he's really bad for you, but my God, is he delicious. Big Bear DT, so hard to resist.
So hard to resist.
But what do you say about the people here now saying it's time to go on a diet?
Yeah, is it worth it?
it might sate my appetite for a while, but I'm only looking worse. My skin's breaking out in spots. My waistline's getting a bit out of control, and overall, it's not the best thing for me.
So hard to resist.
So hard to resist.
It's very enjoyable eating the burger.
My God.
Is he delicious?
My God.
So hard to resist.
Lovely big sloppy bacon cheeseburger.
Bertrand Traore.
Bertrand Traore.
A moment on the lips, forever on the hips. Let's do the Ronnie Rosenthal Award. It could have been so much stickier if it wasn't for Emmy Martinez. Although maybe we should thank the stickiness of his jersey, because that ball almost went underneath him as well. It was just a ball over the top. We might look, it might have been offside. It was close though. Konsa looked like he could have been playing him onside. Berrettin Diaz goes down the left. It's always down the left. And he cuts inside. Like, the shot's not great, to be honest. He called it right on the commentary. He said it's just, you know, he's made it clear what he's doing, but maybe he couldn't do much else. And in fairness, he's probably tried to pull it then when it looked like he was going to whip it around Martinez, but Martinez gets down on it eventually. But it's like his ribs land on it, and thank God they did, and thank God they're that strong.
Yeah, the first thing you said there, like, it might have been offside. The important thing here is the line was a mess. Like the four of them were all in completely random positions, seen strung across there. And why are you praising him? It's like, oh, to be fair to him, it looks like he was trying to pull it there, even though he telegraphed he was going to whip it into the... But he didn't pull it, though, did he? He hit it straight at the goalkeeper. Like, if he changed his decision, then change your decision and put it at the front post. Don't put it to one place you don't want to put it.
Now, we're going to step on some Paul Merson Award nominations, but Ezri Konsa, step forward here. Some lovely link up of Leon Bailey down the right hand side, and just the way he cuts inside, it's just gorgeous. Like, he just goes for it. He's not just drilling the ball across, he's not panicking. It's not a centre half thinking, oh Jesus, I'm in the box. It's just a great football player looking at a shit football player thinking, yeah, go on, I'll go past him. And he goes past him, holds somebody else off on his left, and it's a save from foddering him in the end, which nobody would have expected, but I think from the position Konsa found himself in, it would have been tough. Maybe if he could have went under his legs, I don't know, he's holding somebody off, the keeper's out on him. He's hit the ball on target. I know.
Oh my God, it's absolutely filthy. And the strength afterwards, it's not fair. Like, he shouldn't be this good at football.
Yeah.
But you're right, he should just lace that at Fotheringham's face with his left foot. Like, if he doesn't score, at least he's hit Fotheringham in the face. But he's trying to run around it and never really gets there. So there's no power in the shot, and it's never going to go in the way he's waiting for the ball, trying to get his body over the top of it, trying to hit it with his right foot. Like, that was probably a bad decision. Really hard to criticize him, given what went before.
Yeah. And actually, lovely worked corner, to be fair. And it's Youri Tielemans' chance. It's Bailey goes out to take it as Douglas Luiz runs away from it. And Bailey puts it in front of him. And Douglas Luiz drills it. He doesn't float it. He drills it to the far side of the box, where Tielemans has looped around to the far side of the box. And he volleys it. And he doesn't catch it the way he wants to, but he still gets it down underneath the crossbar. He gets it on target, and it's headed off the line in the end. So it actually is quite unlucky. But if he had caught it, I mean, if he had caught that, that would have been just spectacular.
Yeah, it's an absolutely brilliant routine, and we can thank our lucky stars that it didn't go in, because we would have had another 90 minutes of Austin McPhee during the next game. But the Coyard insteps it. Like, yeah. How often do you get to volley across unmarked? Fucking volley it.
Of all the people I trust to connect with that, like, Tielemans is so good on the ball. Like, his touch is brilliant. His right foot is brilliant. I would trust him to absolutely spank that. Technically, he's really good.
Yeah, and I wonder, was it just this routine has worked so well, and he's so close in, he probably thinks he doesn't have to volley it like that. I don't know, just fucking put your laces through that. If you sky that, pal, I'm forgiving you. But, like, don't make me bring on fucking Zaniolo to show you how it's done. Fucking put that with your laces, buddy.
Yeah. And then Ollie Watkins with the worst lob attempt of all time. I mean, this is just a lovely ball from Bailey around the corner. It's the first time. There was a lot of this tonight, which is great to see coming back. You know, just ball played into Tielemans or McGinn or Bailey, and they're just hooking it around to somebody who's dropped into that space. And this time Watkins has dropped off the defender's shoulder, got in behind again. And look, the only thing you can say about this is that he must have known he was onside and it put him off.
He must have been wearing steel toe cap boots as well. That couldn't have come off his foot any worse. It was dreadful.
Bogle volleyed one wide for Sheffield United. Got a lot of cheers because they finally got a shot. It was actually a good strike, to be fair to him. I don't think it warranted the ironic cheers. And then Konsa puts all her hearts in all her mouths, crashes off the post. It's a Yuri Tielemans free, nice free. It's great defending, actually, the back post, in fairness. They get it away just as Konsa's coming clattering in. And his knee crashes off the post. He looks all right in the end, but for a second there, I was like, who are we playing next? And I open it up, and I'm like, I'm not watching Cash and Carlos and Longley and Moreno as their back four. I don't deserve this.
Yeah, I was just thinking, all right, Ezra, I want to break the record as well, but I don't want you breaking your leg to win a fucking corner as well. Like, the other thing is, even if you just did it all, like, you know, step towards that defender, he probably would have kicked it out for a corner anyway. You don't need to go flying in around behind him. Just tell him you're there. Shout out his name. Shout out my ball. Do anything. You'll get the corner. It's not worth it for that.
Yeah. Diaby. Yeah, I mean, lovely, lovely run from Cash. Really powerful, really fast, direct. And he just knocks it forward to Tielemans. And Diaby gets it and it comes back onto his left. And it's very obvious that he was going to do that. But you were sort of wondering, could he have put that across? But, you know, maybe we should just be thankful that he got the shot away this time. But I just feel like in all our opposition, he's just running back into trouble like we've seen him do.
Yeah, but he wasn't against an all-out opposition, so that's the thing. The space was always going to be there, and I think he knew that. It's a lovely dummy in advance of that as well, and it's a delicious little ball from Tielemans. So simple. Honestly, it was far too easy. I mean, like, Tielemans nearly looked like he wasn't going to play it because he probably couldn't believe it was on. And then Diaby has really good feet, walks into the space. It's a decent hit, but just put it in the corner, and it's a goal. It's a really bad finish after that.
Just do a Bailey on it. It's not that hard. And then Tielemans blew it at this stage, and it just looked like he did blow a gasket, actually. He was absolutely brilliant. Probably, like, if it wasn't for Watkins, probably man the match. And Douglas Luiz obviously came off after halftime, so that saved him from winning man the match. But Tielemans has Diaby and Watkins as men over. Like, it's so clear, and he could go either side. Like, it's so... This isn't a hard one to figure out. The defending isn't set. They're not taking up any good positions. Just pick your pass. And in the end, he doesn't get it out. And Villa actually go down the other end. They can see the fucking corner from that big chance. They should have made it six.
Yeah, it took Ramsey long enough to see the pass as well. It's like he didn't play it to Watkins. And then it was like, go, oh, there's two there, pal. Yeah. And I have no idea what happened to Tielemans there. It was so strange. If he did blow a gasket, just give it to Diaby then. If he did blow a gasket, give it to Watkins. They like, do something. Don't just stand on the ball and lose it. So strange. And you're right, that led to Sheffield United. It's three big chances in that.
Yeah, it's the first corner. And of course, they get a chance that's going straight for the goal line. And of course, it's Ollie Watkins that heads it off the goal line as well. It was Robinson who got the header. And then the double Emi Martinez save, which is really good from him, especially as he's fallen on his arse both times. And then it's about to still go in with their fourth chance in that corner. Their fourth chance from that corner. And then Boubacar Kamara deserves the credit then for nicking in and nicking the ball.
Yeah, and even the chance before that was created by Tielemans that got Archer away in the counter-attack and to win the corner. Yeah. Watkins does really well to get it off the line. Emi Martinez does absolutely incredible. And yeah, Boubacar Kamara does brilliantly to poke it away. Just glad to see them trying to see out the clean sheet. I'm glad to see them that it matters to them as well, because that always matters to me when I'm watching a match. It always takes the shine off it for me. If you're 5-0 up and you 5-1 just isn't as good, it's nowhere near as good.
No, it's not good if you draw the second half 1-1 either. It's not nice. Your form's not good then. You've drawn your last game. And the last two chances, Morgan Rogers. You know, he's the first touch for Aston Villa. He would have loved that. He would have absolutely loved it. Cash again, great run from Matt Cash. Pokes it in front of Diaby, pulls it back. Nice from Diaby. And there it is, Rogers. And a little tiny bit behind him, but it's far too kind. And he balloons it over. And then Cameron Archer again just goes through. This was the period in the game where the boys were sort of flat footed and just letting red and white jerseys just piss past them. And Longley was alert. Thankfully, he wasn't flat footed and he came across and blocked Archer, but only got the chance because Archer seemed to be falling over as he was coming through.
It's absolutely fucking pathetic from Rodgers. Really, real. it's an absolutely brilliant 70-yard run from Cash to set this up, actually. And the players in front of him give him absolutely nothing. The movement from Rodgers and the Abbey were terrible. Luckily, Sheffield United eventually gave him the pass, and Cash must have known that as well. Like, you know, when you're playing against people who are shite, you can lose your marker by making a second run or just by standing still. You know, if the ball was moving, just stand still. They'll run away. It's absolutely hilarious. Yeah. Just stand still and people will run away from you, and then you can collect the ball. And that's what happened for Cash, and he eventually was able to work it to Diaby. Diaby worked it well. You're right, it's behind Rodgers. If Rodgers was in the game for an extra 10 minutes, he probably would have realized he had time to take a touch there. He shouldn't be taking a touch, but if it's behind him, maybe just take the touch as well, because Sheffield United are dreadful.
Who wins this? Is it Rodgers? I think it is, isn't it?
I think it has to be. Yeah, it's a ball falling to a forward 8 yards out.
Well, yeah. Tiedemann's had the volley, but like that, as I said, that would have been an unbelievable goal. Who wins the Paul Merson? That's just filthy award. We've got Douglas Luiz's pass to Ollie Watkins. We've got Ezri Konsa for his chance that we talked about. And then we've got Boubacar Kamara down the right-hand side. Just some lovely footwork, you know, just to sort of, from right to left, stepping around the defender, getting absolutely swiped off his feet. And referee not interested. That's probably the stage where you did notice the referee then for the first time, because he wasn't interested at that stage.
I think it has to go to Ezri Konsa, because like Ezri Konsa's moving at such speed there, and it was so unexpected what he did. And he just seemed to float past.
Floats all the time.
It was just to see it in the opposition 6 yard box, Conan, it's something extra special.
Yeah, all right. I can't believe we're giving to anybody over Douglas Luiz, but I'll accept it in this case because it is Ezri Konsa.
And because it's Douglas Luiz as well, sure, Douglas Luiz can play that pass in his sleep.
There was only one nomination for the Peter Enkelman What the Fuck Award. It was Longley's pass to Tim, and you know, both of these guys at fault. Longley's pass is just, Jesus Christ, he played that. Just a centre-back who's under a lot of pressure, centre-midfielder. Just unnecessary pass. And then Tim is just dallying on it, and then eventually he turns the wrong direction and loses the ball. Any other team, we've probably conceded a goal there.
I'm not sure if I'd blame Longley that much. I mean, Longley has played it into his centre midfielder.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Skip it back to Longley.
Yeah. I've got the category that we only had in one game so far, but maybe we should keep an eye and bring it back every so often, is the Sheffield United restart. That is the most depressing thing I've ever seen award. Coined, of course, after the game at Villa Park, where Sheffield United just booted the ball out of play from the restart to try and save the 1-1 that they blew. They were winning that match, and then they weren't interested in trying to go back and win it again. But the most depressing thing I've ever seen award this week goes to Sheffield United. And it's when they're 5-0 down and they're still playing a 5-3-2, and it's not even that. It's that they're still just sitting in their own box doing nothing. It's like, what? Like, you have to score 6 goals here. I mean, what's going on?
You've literally got tens of fans to keep interested in this game. I mean, I think you could probably, the most depressing thing I've ever seen award, you could probably just give it to Sheffield United. I mean, there was a moment in the first half when Konsa let whatever shoutbag it was kick the ball up the field. Konsa chased him into the corner flag and then turned away and just let him kick it back to Carlos. Like, he knew nothing else was going to happen. Like, he might even have expected the Sheffield United fullback to miss the ball and spin in a circle and fall on his arse or fucking run into the corner flag, legs akimbo like Wile E. Coyote. But he knew he was getting the ball back one way or another, so he just let him kick the ball. That just really showed the lack of respect he had. There was another moment, McAtee tried to dribble on the outside of Moreno in the first half. He was on the sideline, Conan. And he tried to go around the outside of him. And then there was another moment in the second half, Bertrand Diaz tackled himself with his own left foot. He was up against Clement Longley, Conan. He couldn't beat Clement Longley for pace. Couldn't even beat his own standing foot. He tackled himself and knocked it out for a goal kick. I remember
that. He ran out of play. Yeah, he kept the ball away from Longley. Is probably what he was thinking. Because his right foot knocked it towards him. His left foot said, no, 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 no. And then by the time he realized what had happened, it was out of play.
Unbelievable. Most pathetic thing I've ever seen.
from the most pathetic team we've ever seen. The Weimann meter going up. Andy Weimann's going up, Liam. I mean, people were worried what would become of this meter when Andy Weimann jumped ship. Jumped ship. He went from Bristol City to... But he went to West Brom, and the idea of this meter is that we could never hate Andy Weimann or never hate somebody like him. And he went to West Brom, and we were all a little bit like, oh, you know, how do we feel about this? I mean, if it turns out West Brom's a feeder club for Aston Villa now. I mean, you're just constantly buying players. Anybody play for West Brom? Jesus, there's a thought. There's a thought. I mean, we didn't have any striker again on the bench. And we've got Andy Weimann, who's going up on this meter because he just scored the winner in the only goal of the game against Birmingham City, of all teams. So we were worried about him going to West Brom for the rivalry. But, I mean, if he's going to keep doing this to Birmingham City every week, which he won't, obviously, but we'll be absolutely delighted for him.
Yeah, and I hear he celebrated widely in front of the Birmingham City fans as well, which would normally make you go up, but given what's happened in the football stadiums. That neck of the woods recently. I don't know if that was the wisest thing to do.
Yeah. Going up. I mean, let's put Longley up. I mean, he gets enough criticism, and I mean, he kept a clean sheet. I don't think he did anything wrong today. Not that he had to do much today, but I mean, it is a game that didn't put a foot wrong, really.
And he absolutely terrified Bertrand Diaz as well, so that's good.
Going up, Alex Moreno, after he went down so far against Sheffield United. Going up, Douglas Luiz, obviously. Going up, Boubacar Kamara.
Yeah, Boubacar Kamara was good today, yeah, without doubt.
Yeah, going up, Youri Tielemans, absolutely, for sure. He was just sensational. And going up, Ollie Watkins. Going up, does Diaby get to go up? Because I don't remember him doing anything that absolutely made me want to rip my stomach out like the last one.
Yeah, I suppose I'm happy enough for Diaby to go up. He should have had an assist for Rodgers as well. That would have been nice. It would have been a nice thing for him to happen to him. But yeah, like I don't think he exactly lit the world on fire. I remember the game he was coming into as well.
Yeah. I want Matt Cash to go up. There was something about the Newcastle game. I know he was basically at fault for the third and the final nail in our coffin goal. But there was something about it that I didn't mind too much. And when he came on today, I was like, oh, for God's sake, I said it earlier. And it was good. I liked it. Once again, conscious that under no pressure, really. But yeah, I liked it. I liked the movement of him down the right.
Yeah, he looked like he looked like he wanted to continue scoring, which I was all for as well. Like, you know, let's keep going, Matt, here. And he did carry the ball at least 70 yards two or three times as well, which is a feat in itself, even if you're not being tackled.
Yeah. There's nobody going up as far as Bertrand Traore's going up, though. I mean, it is sad, but this is an emotional plea for Bertrand Traore to go up. It isn't me just saying a heartfelt goodbye to him, which, you know, I really want to do. I really want to give him his own podcast again. But you go back and listen to the Leicester City podcast last season. I mean, the first 7 minutes of that, no joke, are all about Bertrand Traore. I know he scored a winner, but we are talking every which way possible about Bertrand Traore. I mean, we're going into Bertrand Russell a lot, talking about him. And we're talking about we're talking about how he conquered fear. I mean, we brought in a quote from Bertrand Russell about the idea of fear and how it inhibits man and how it doesn't inhibit Bertrand Traore. Go back and listen to it. He got every single bit of praise that he could ever want in that podcast. But genuinely, he deserves to be going up here because he's cancelled his contract. He's cancelled his contract and just moved to Villarreal. Now, I'm a bit pissed off at you because you told me just in the last podcast, Bertrand Traore ain't going anywhere, pal.
Is that what I said?
Yeah, not until his contract's up. And
what happened?
And he cancelled his contract. Very good. Very good. And he cancelled his contract, meaning nobody had to pay any money for him. I mean, and he could actually leave because otherwise he wouldn't have left. And that's why he's going up on the Weimann meter as well. He should have been a bit sharper for that. But it reminded me of Jack Rodwell. Remember him? Jesus, like, talk about the great hope. I mean, he's coming from Man City, went to Sunderland, and then they couldn't get rid of him. He's 32 now, by the way. 32, I'm sure he was in all those Daily Mail teams and whatever else about players who are going to be starting for England in the 2022 World Cup and whatever. But I always, always remember the Sunderland Until I Die documentary, and they had just signed Ashley Fletcher from United, and whoever the CEO was at that time, there was excitement in the building because they were finally getting rid of Jack Rodwell, and they were going to get him off the wage because they brought him down from the Premier League and the Championship. They were struggling, they needed to get rid of him, and he was hanging around, and it's just like, this is annoying, this boy's not playing for us and he's getting so much money. And that episode was about Rodwell's leaving, and they signed Ashley Fletcher, and then Ashley Fletcher's in the building for the first time, and the CEO says, hello, hang on, just got a phone call, takes the phone call, finds out Jack Rodwell's going nowhere, and goes, fuck! Slams his door, and Fletcher's standing outside, sort of, you know, giving a little smile because the cameras are on him, but thinking, what have I just walked into? And that is the feeling. Like, we're talking about being under pressure there for a profit and sustainability, and we can't get rid of these players. And Bertrand Traore says, boys, one last time, I will dig you out. I will do this for you. And honestly, genuinely, deserves a lot of admiration. And it's just been a great, he's been a great man to have around. I mean, what a character. You couldn't dream of a better character to talk about on a podcast when you're doing 50 podcasts a season. I mean, drop a Bertrand Traore in there every so often, and it does add a bit of spice, in fairness to him. And I am going to miss him for all those reasons.
Yeah, but the other way to think about this, though, is if Bertrand Traore is going to die happy, that's not a threat. Like, I'm upset, but I'm not angry.
His contract is going up one way or the other.
But he's going to die happy when in reality he should be dying full of regret. Like, he should be dying knowing that he didn't make it to where he should have. Like, he'll die never knowing that, though. Because the thing, the only thing that stopped him becoming the best footballer in the world is that very thing that means he'll die without regret. He doesn't understand the game of football. And that's the only thing that ever held him back. But in not understanding the game of football, Jesus Christ, was he able to bring joy to the world. Do you remember that? Was it against Leicester as well, where he did that shot back inside with his right foot and just ended up 15 yards of space while the player went sliding past him down the byline without understanding what had just happened? Everton. And then he's in 15 yards of space, got the whole half of the pitch then to run into, and he just pops it off to Watkins and stands there. Didn't care.
Yeah. Didn't care. Scored the coldest goal that we'll ever see against West Brom. That's the sort of goal you can just watch it over and over and over, because every time it happens, you're looking at something else, and he always seems to hit it faster than you expect, no matter how often you watch it, and he always seems to hit it lighter than you expect as well. And you keep watching it back. See, how did the keeper get done? But every time you watch it, it's like, yeah, I can see how he got done, but I still don't understand it. And there is Bertie T.
That is, and therein lies the glorious enigma of Bertie T. And he's had like I will have regrets. But obviously, we had to get him off the wages and all, and it's great that he did drop his contract. But surely he's looking at Leon Bailey thinking, fuck, if I just listen to this Unai Emery lad for half a season, what sort of a player could I be? But then you always have to come back to it. Does he understand that he's not the player he could be? I don't think he does.
Yeah, I don't think he does. But I'm happy that he is enjoying himself, and that's all that really matters from now on. And I will watch his progress at Villarreal with great interest. Thanks for everything, Bertie. I really mean it. Thanks for the vibes more than anything else. The only person I have going down on the Vima meter is Gareth Southgate heading out to Amsterdam to watch Jordan Henderson play for Ajax.
Than the fucking camera panning to him every 20 seconds in today's game, wasn't it?
Yeah. Look, I don't know how Jordan Henderson performed in this match, but I do know how Jordan Henderson performed in that match. There's nothing flying out to Holland to watch Jordan Henderson that you will learn anything new watching him. Like, you know exactly what Jordan Henderson's going to bring to the table, and you know, Gareth, exactly what he's very specifically going to bring to your England squad that you've definitely already included him in.
I'll be interested to see if those floated balls to the back post will work over in Netherlands. I kind of know why you're so skeptical about it.
Yeah. Anybody else you want to put up or down?
No, I think you've covered it there. I mean, we could go through the whole squad and put them up, put in Emery up yet again because of how he was able to inspire the team to just absolutely blow apart whatever that was we were playing against today.
Yeah. Jack Rodwell goes down, obviously. He's out in Australia now playing football for Western Sydney Wanderers at 32 years of age.
I can't believe he's 30. I would have guessed 37. Going up, yeah. Jack Rodwell's age. Going down Jack Rodwell's age without me noticing.
Everton City, Sunderland, Blackburn, Sheffield United, one game, Western City Wanderers.
Couldn't even make it at Sheffield United.
Sydney FC, actually, is where he's at now. Who knows? I didn't know there was a difference between Western City Wanderers and Sydney FC. Sue me. Sue me. Anyway, we'll leave it at that. And thank you very much for listening again. I think we're back midweek for the FA Cup, Liam. The FA Cup replay. So hopefully we don't... I was going to have such a depressing take on that. I was going to be like, oh, hopefully we don't waste too much energy. We're ready for it. Like, come on, let's just go for this match. Let's just put Chelsea out of their misery and take it from there. It's Wednesday night. We'll see you after that match.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.